Think of the second case of the day, the International Honor of United Automobile Aerospace and Agricultural Workers of America, et al. Versus Rockford Powertrain. Mr. Olszewski.
May it please the Court. Your Honors, the issues in this matter can be summed up in 2 points. Did the lower court err in granting summary judgment in favor of the defendant where, one, the defendant breached its contractual obligation midterm of a currently effective collective bargaining agreement to provide retirees insurance to the retirees plaintiff's appellant, and two, where the defendant entered into binding agreements with the union upon the retiring of each bargaining unit member and providing lifetime insurance benefits and life insurance coverage. In addressing point one, Your Honors, at a minimum, the retirees were entitled to unmodified insurance benefits during the term of the contract, the collective bargaining agreement, that is. The district court erred in reading the plan document in isolation to the collective bargaining agreement. As the court knows, the documents must be read as a whole. And as the collective bargaining agreement states at Article 15, Section 2, to begin with, this argument shall be in full force and effect as of March 2, 1998, and shall remain in effect until March 4, 2001. Article 15, Section 4E of the collective bargaining agreement specifically incorporates the plan document. The plan specifically states that it is maintained pursuant to the collective bargaining agreement. Article 15, Section 1 of the Collective Bargaining Agreement permits no modification of the agreement unless in writing and mutual agreement. Your Honor, in our case, the Collective Bargaining Agreement is the master document. The plan document is the subservient document. It was incorporated into the Collective Bargaining Agreement. It is undisputed that there was no mutual written agreement between the parties to modify retirees' insurance benefits.
At least you say in 1998. What happened in 2001?
In 2001, Your Honor, regarding any changes to retirees' insurance benefits?
Right. The collective bargaining agreement that was in force at the time of the change expired in mid-2001. What happened? Was it renewed? Did the parties negotiate this issue? Did they agree on changes?
Your Honor, to my knowledge, another collective bargaining agreement was entered into. The plan language remained the same. And again, the retirees...
Did the parties negotiate these changes in 2001? Right. Your position is, I take it, that this is a mandatory subject of collective bargaining, and therefore it has to be negotiated on demand, and so on. So I was wondering what happened in the next round of negotiations. Did the union demand to negotiate it? Did it?
Your Honor, I cannot give a full answer to that question. And furthermore, that argument was not raised by the defendant in the lower court. There is no record of what happened in the 2001 collective bargaining agreement as to whether or not the parties negotiated, again, over the retirees' benefits.
Mm-hmm. One of the reasons I ask is that Pittsburgh Plate Glass holds that the active employees are free to sell out the retirees. Right? The transaction in Pittsburgh Plate Glass was the union sold out the retirees for better benefits for active workers. And the Supreme Court said that's permissible, the results have to be enforced. Maybe that's what happened in 2001. It would be interesting to know.
I agree, Your Honor.
Okay.
Your Honor, the Rockford Powertrain unilaterally implemented these changes midterm of the collective bargaining agreement. That is also undisputed. And Deal v. Twin Disc is controlling on this issue. In Deal v. Twin Disc, the union had negotiated with the employer a shutdown agreement. That shutdown agreement incorporated the insurance agreement. And the insurance agreement incorporated the plan. The plan contained the reservation of rights clause similar to the plan reservation of rights clause in our case. In that case, this court found that the shutdown agreement was the master document. It was the document that was negotiated. It was the document that incorporated the insurance agreement. Our case is analogous. As I said, the shutdown agreement in Deal is analogous to the collective bargaining agreement in this case. They were both negotiated. They were both the master documents that were incorporating the plan document. Another fact to support our position that the defendant breached his contractual obligations midterm of the collective bargaining agreement is that the plan became effective March 1st, 1998. The collective bargaining agreement, which incorporated the plan, was executed the following day. Therefore, the collective bargaining agreement eviscerated any unilateral right that the defendant had to modify the plan. Because specifically in the contract, in the collective bargaining agreement, at Article 15, Section 1, that permits the only mechanism for modifying the collective bargaining agreement. And again, that's by mutual written agreement, of which there is none on this record. Summing up the first point, Your Honors, the tail cannot wag the dog. The collective bargaining agreement is the master agreement. The plan cannot change the terms of the collective bargaining agreement.
Now, the plan in this case didn't directly conflict with any statement regarding the duration of the insurance in the collective bargaining agreement, and that was the case in Deal, was it not?
Regarding the shutdown agreement?
Mm-hmm.
The shutdown agreement, you're right, Your Honor, that was the case in Deal. And
I don't think that's the case here.
Your Honor, in this case, which actually leads into my second argument, here we had the defendant's own drafted contract. We had separate written evidence that the defendant intended to provide lifetime insurance benefits and life insurance coverage to the retirees. Upon each bargaining unit member retiring, the union met with the employer. The employer and the union had written on these documents, beginning with the vested pension amount, then moving to the life insurance amount that the retiree was entitled to for his or her life, and then moving to the contribution amount that was fixed that the retiree was required to pay for his or her life to maintain their health insurance benefits. And here, that is a subsequent agreement to show that the intent, it goes beyond the collective bargaining agreement. If there was, Your Honor just posed the question regarding the time frame, these subsequent documents, although granted there is no duration clause in those documents themselves, as we all know, the contract should be construed against the drafter. It was Powertrain that drafted the document. And just so we all don't pass over these written documents lightly, each of these written agreements were executed by three different agents of the employer, Rockford Powertrain, and three different agents of the union. Those signatures are located at the bottom of those documents. This is a serious contract that was entered into. It was consistent with the terms of the collective bargaining agreement that the plan documents couldn't be modified without following the procedure in the collective bargaining agreement, and that is the mutual written consent. Thank you.
Mr. Clement?
Good morning, Your Honors. Your Honor, there's two basic tenets, I think, that the parties are in perfect agreement on in this case. Number one, there is really no separate insurance agreement but for the plan document that the UAW has relied on consistently in arguing this case. And secondly, that the language of the plan document is unambiguous. Now, there's the rub. It's unambiguous. We believe in one direction and they believe in another. But here, Your Honor, is the answer. The answer is that the UAW would have, and the class members.
Let me tell you what my problem is, counsel. Maybe it will help you address it. The language of the plan saying that the right to change is reserved,
mm-hmm.
certainly unambiguous. but it is not clear who that is a reservation with respect to. Your argument on the lifetime benefits aspect of this case is that that language is a reservation of rights with respect to the employees individually. It's what defeats any claim that the benefits last for life.
Correct.
But it doesn't, at least to me, clearly defeat an argument that the change has to be made by agreement between the employer and the union. Via the plan and the employees, the plan can be changed. But how the plan gets changed and whether the union has to consent to change is not something that that language tells us.
Well, actually, I think it does, Your Honor. But let me respond to that. Number one, it's interesting that the union relies upon language in the plan document that says that the plan is maintained pursuant to the collective bargaining agreement. That appears on page 141 of the document that we call the plan document and summary plan description at the various places. The very next clause, Your Honor, is the future of the plans, the document, the language relied upon by the employer in this case. It follows the very next, so they rely on one sentence and then pretend that the next sentence doesn't apply. Now, with regard to your question, Your Honor, as to whether the contract somehow was breached, the contract, as correctly pointed out by the court below, is argued continuously by Rockford Powertrain. The contract incorporated the insurance plan. Now, whether it became part and parcel of the contract or not, it incorporated that plan. It didn't vitiate the plan, the contract as proposed by counsel for the plaintiff. It incorporated it. You can't have it both ways. You can't say that the plan is incorporated and then say, but by the way, only sections 8, 10, 15, 22, and 27 are incorporated. The parties didn't plan to incorporate sections 9, 12, 13.
Whatever you're doing, you're not addressing my concern.
Okay, Your Honor.
The right to change the plan obviously exists.
Right.
The question is, by whom is it exercised and when?
By the express language of the contract, by the company, and this is the difference between this case and the Dale case, where I know Judge Flom had a problem with the language, which seemed very descriptive and didn't suggest who could change it. In this case, it's very clear. It says the company may change it.
Let me try it this a different way. Suppose the employer has a handbook.
Mm-hmm.
The handbook tells the workers that although we have agreed to pay you $10 an hour, you have to understand that this is not guaranteed for your entire life,
mm-hmm.
that your hourly wage may go up or down.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Does that mean that the employer can reduce the hourly wage during the term of a collective bargaining agreement?
Well, two answers to that, Your Honor. Number one, I think it does, because I think it becomes part and parcel of the contract. But secondly, this case, Your Honor, is also before the NLRB on that very issue. And the National Labor Relations Board is now grappling with that issue in Washington, D.C. on appeal. But the administrative law judge found that there was attempts to bargain this issue. If you look at the administrative law judge's decision, I believe in tab K of volume 2 of record, the document 14, you'll see that the administrative law judge found that the company attempted to bargain this issue with the UAW, but the UAW did not cease to bargain it. They said, no, we're not going to bargain it.
That's perfectly normal for terms and conditions of employment. And then when the collective bargaining agreement ends, the employer can put its last offer into operation after impasse has been reached. But it doesn't follow that one can change during midstream. That's the concern here.
Well, but Your Honor, what then do you make of what can one make of the language when it says that you can change, modify, or amend at any time? It doesn't say at the end of the collective bargaining agreement. It could have. It doesn't say that. It says at any time. If the parties intended this to be only changeable at the end of the contract, the language could have said that. And this document was given to the union every time it was during negotiations, was sent to the retirees, was sent to the active workforce. Your Honor, this language that we're talking about today has been in existence since 1984, 4 years before Rockford Powertrain bought this facility. This is the same plan that the predecessor employer, BorgWarner, had. The very same plan. Rockford Powertrain buys the company in 1988, has this plan in front of it, sees the language. The union never proposed changing the language. The union never proposed any kind of restrictions on the right to change. If the union chose to, they could. As your honor suggested in 2001, they could have done something. But frankly, the answer to your question, your honor, is that there were no negotiations over this topic in 2001. The union could have chose that. Now, do strange things happen in negotiations? You bet. They do. I can't tell you what was going on. Maybe there was a trade-off. Maybe there was a reason the union chose not to. Maybe it was the fact that Rockford Power Trend was a new employer in 1988 and the union didn't want to ruffle feathers or come up with a topic that they thought would be a difficult one. But the fact of the matter is, when Rockford bought the business, Rockford Power Trend bought the business in 1988, there was only in existence this plan. This is the only document either party can refer to in this matter, Your Honor, that has anything to do with insurance. Now, the union says, well, but this document, this is the dog wagging the dog. It's not, Your Honor. It's the dog wagging the dog, because the contract says the insurance agreement is incorporated in this contract. The insurance agreement in all its import. As the court found below, as we argue here, you can't then pick and choose from that insurance agreement.
If you would perhaps lower your voice.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I apologize.
Discourse.
I apologize. Your Honor, Twin Disc is a dramatically different case. It sets up the law beautifully, and I think the presumption and everything else. But the fact of the matter is, in Twin Disc, there was a plant shutdown agreement which did come after the contract and which this court found changed or superseded the contract. The language of the plan document in this situation does not supersede the contract. It's incorporated into the contract. It's entirely different situation. In Twin Desk, the court was troubled about the language, and I think that the language in that case wasn't as clear as ours. The language in that case says your employer may change. It was somewhat descriptive, and I think the court expressed its concern about how ambiguous or unambiguous that language was. That's not the case in our case, Your Honor. In our case, the language is very unambiguous. Although the company expects and intends to continue the plan indefinitely, it reserves the right to modify, amend, suspend, or terminate. The company did seek to bargain this with the union. The union chose not to bargain. The union filed an unfair labor practice charge. The general counsel of the National Labor Relations Board took this case up. It was argued fully before an administrative law judge, and the administrative law judge ruled favorably for the company, taking the position that the union had failed to request bargaining over this issue. That's in the record, Your Honor. The entire decision is in the record at R14. So indeed, Your Honor, this question was taken up and talked about and resolved after a full hearing on this matter. Your Honor, there is a presumption in our circuit that tells us that the welfare rights do not vest automatically. They have to be done contractually. And the presumption for that is based upon very, very real world and congressionally mandated thoughtfulness. And that is that you can't judge these costs, and that's what happened in this case. Frankly, Rockford Power Train was faced with a choice. Do we go out of business, or do we discontinue benefits for our retirees? That was the choice. It's in the record. It was a life-death choice for the company. This is not an employer that's trying to bulk up its income for the year by cutting off benefits. This is an employer that was faced with a life-death choice. There's nothing... I see my lights on, Your Honor.
That indicates you have 2 minutes left.
Okay. There's nothing in the... any document, there's nothing in any document that the union can point to that says that the benefits for retirees is for lifetime. Indeed, quite to the contrary. As properly found by the court below, and as argued, the document is not susceptible to that interpretation because of the plain language giving the company the right to terminate. It is not a question of one document overruling the other or the tail wagging the dog. This is a situation where the party said, we have an insurance agreement, look to the insurance agreement, that's part of the contract, we're going to incorporate it into the contract. As the UAW counsel in his argument pointed out, the contract itself contains that language, the plan document, excuse me. It says that it is part and parcel of the collective bargaining agreement, and right under that, the very next line, Your Honor, is the termination language. Not a hundred pages later, the very next line. You can't read one without the other. And the union, I think in this case, the plaintiffs are asking this court to selectively read the plan document, and we're asking the court only to follow the law and to read the documents as a whole, and when that is done, I think that the conclusion is clear that there is no, the presumption of non-vesting should be upheld.
Thank you, Mr. Grimes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Cheryl Dusky.
Your Honors, the documents must be read as a whole. The collective bargaining agreement is the master document. The plan is incorporated into the collective bargaining agreement. The collective bargaining agreement controls the mechanism for modifying any terms of the collective bargaining agreement. There were no mutual written agreements to modify the terms. Furthermore, Your Honors, the individual contracts that I spoke of earlier were negotiated. The plan document was not negotiated. The plan was unilaterally promulgated by the defendant. It chose that language. But again, the collective bargaining agreement is the master document. The individual contracts were negotiated. The defendant did not address those individual contracts. Instead, the defendant is distancing itself from those individual contracts, just like the lower court did. Those individual contracts are very serious documents. They provide for fixed lifetime benefits. They were entered into not by one member of the employer and one member of the union, but rather three agents of each party. Again, demonstrating the importance of these documents by showing the intent to continue providing benefits to the retirees for their lifetime. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Olszewski. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.